And finally today, essayist Carrie Carlson remembers her father, from the early moments of safety and comfort he provided to her through the role reversal in his later years when she took on the mantle of caregiver.
In my childhood home, we could have set our clocks by the sound of my dad's chickadee-like whistle, one long note and one short. That's how he announced he was home from work every weekday at 5:30. He came in the back door, walked down the hall to the kitchen, and kissed my mom on the cheek. "What's for dinner?" he'd ask. When I heard ice tinkle, I knew food would be on the table in exactly 30 minutes. Like many men of his generation, he liked a drink before dinner. But his was special, a Manhattan made with bourbon, sweet vermouth, real maple syrup, and a dash of spring water from Leelanau County in Michigan. Before we sat down to eat, he took me into the half bathroom by the kitchen. One at a time, he took my hands, held them in the warm water, rubbed soap on them, then gently rinsed and dried them. 60 years later, I can feel his calloused hands surround mine as he took care of his little girl. Only after this nightly ritual did we join the rest of the family at the table. Too young to understand the love that flowed in that soapy water, I felt safe. The summer I turned 12, he took me to the country club and handed me a 5-iron. He showed me how to grip it, stood behind me, put his rough hands over mine, and together we swung the club. He stood by while I hit balls into the deep grass, the woods, the pond on the third hole, and never, ever lost patience with his uncoordinated daughter. Again and again we started over, his hand covering mine, while we practiced the perfect swing. A man of few words, he loved a good story, especially the one he told many times about his visit to the University of Wisconsin when I was a student. A group of us went out for a night on the town, fathers and daughters, on our special weekend together. We slow danced, held hands, jitterbugged, and even attempted to waltz. About midnight, we ended up at a local club in downtown Madison, where he overheard, "Look at those college girls out with men old enough to be their fathers." Dad appreciated good food, especially Mom's cooking, but he had opinions about what she served him for dinner. He loved pot roast, spaghetti, Salisbury steak, pork chop casserole, and chocolate pie. When he ate at the club after golf, Mom made the food he refused to eat: chicken livers, pizza, beets, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, and his least favorite dessert, lemon pie. Every night before he went to bed, he ate a bowl of cold milk and crumbled saltines, said it helped him sleep. I used to watch him, his hands strong yet delicate, as he meticulously broke each square into 4 sections. Born in 1910, he belonged to a generation of men who didn't cook. That was woman's work. That's why he surprised me when we went up to northern Michigan one spring when I was in college, and he made us dinner and breakfast. When did he learn his way around the kitchen? He was a civil engineer, a wood craftsman, and someone who put the cherry in his Manhattan, not a cook. Dinner, a simple meal, consisted of potato salad brought from home and Dad's toasted ham and cheese sandwiches. Hardly haute cuisine, yet to me a feast, when we sat down to a beer and the first meal he had made since he married in the 1930s. At breakfast, he pulled out flour, oil, buttermilk, eggs, baking powder, and made what would become his specialty, buttermilk pancakes. He immediately mastered the art of the pancake: crisp, brown edges, nicely rounded, medium thick, yet light. They made a perfect platform for his favorite maple syrup from Michigan. From that day on, he and Mom never agreed on whether or not to spread butter on the griddle. He put extra oil in the batter, while Mom preferred butter, said it added flavor. I wanted, no, craved, relationship-building conversations, father-daughter chats about life. When I tried to talk with him, tell him something I'd done or wanted to do, he met my chatty commentary with silence. On the golf course, proud of a successful 8-iron shot that landed on the green, I'd say, "Look, don't you think I'm getting better?" Silence. He would pick up his clubs and walk to his ball. Maybe it was my fault, because I was a stubborn, smart-mouthed daughter who argued with her mother, the one who strained against limits, rules, and expectations. She always said the same thing, "You're getting too big for your britches." When she said no, I said, "Why not?" And we were off to another round. Dad never got in the ring. He let us fight, yet demonstrated disapproval when he laid down the evening paper and left the room. I wish he'd said something to end it, but he wouldn't. Perhaps he didn't want to confront me with words. He chose silence, and in that silence, anger and disgust. Many years later, I went too far. After my children were grown, my birth family, Mom, Dad, two brothers, and I, spent a week each October in a rental home in northern Michigan. I sliced that week from a busy schedule and made it a priority because I wanted to honor my parents and their love of Lake Michigan and Leelanau County. We did this for 10 years. Mom brought the food we needed for the week, and my brothers and I helped with the meals and washed the dishes. It was a special time for all of us. My parents met, courted, married, and vacationed in Leelanau County. They knew where to find the former logging trails for hikes, where to find gravel roads that led to blackberries, and where to find the best farm vegetable stands. On the night before we left, on what would be our last night together in Michigan, I did something I will always regret. When Mom said, "It's time to tell you we're not coming back next year," I reverted to the childish, argumentative, big-mouthed teenager I should have left behind 30 years ago. "What do you mean we're not coming back? That's ridiculous." She took a big bite of homemade lemon pie and said, "Dad and I are too old." How could my parents call themselves old? Michigan was their life, their first love, their heartland. Could I stand by and watch them give up something that had been a part of their identity for 84 years? I knew what was best for them. I could fix it. "You love Michigan. You need to keep coming. I'll bring the food. You show up. I'll take care of everything." Mom repeated the truth. "We're too old." But still, they strolled on the beach, walked, albeit slowly, on their favorite trails in the woods, and sat for hours watching waves breaking on the rocks in front of our rental cottage. The argument escalated. Scared and threatened by their decision to let go of something they loved, I refused to let go. Dad sat, silent as always, and listened, just as he did when I was 16. When he stood up, glared at me, and growled, "Listen to your mother," it was over. He went to bed. Mom followed him into the bedroom. When the time came for me to leave the next day, he went into the bedroom. I called him to say goodbye. Silence. Every time after that, when I drove to Indiana to visit, Mom greeted me with a big hug. Dad stood next to her and hugged me, too. But something had broken that sad night in Michigan. I thought his unconditional love for me had been tarnished. His hugs never felt the same. The last time I visited my parents before he had a debilitating stroke, I saw his hands at breakfast, wrinkled and gnarly, covered with flour. I wanted to take them in mine and gently wash away the years. I wanted forgiveness. In the nursing home, when he could no longer speak, I held his hand and reminded him of the years he had washed and dried mine, and he squeezed my hand.
Lake Effect essayist Kerry Carlson is a freelance writer, outdoor guide in the West and overseas, and a former environmental educator. She lives in Milwaukee. And that is all the time we have today. I'm Bonnie North, wishing all the fathers out there a very happy Father's Day. Thanks for making us a part of your afternoon. Lake Effect Weekend airs every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 4 in the afternoon, and you can hear our weekday version of Lake Effect at 10 in the morning. It's all on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned now for Weekend All Things Considered, coming up next.